Hello, everyone. I am so excited to introduce you to today's guest, Rachel Bernstein, LMFT. Ms. Bernstein has been working with victims of cults and emotional abusers for 27 years, and she has her own weekly podcast, Indoctrination, covering cults, manipulators, and ways to protect yourself from systems of control. So firstly, I want to thank you for speaking with all of us today, Ms. Bernstein.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. And you can call me Rachel.
Okay, thank you.
I look forward to speaking with you. Yeah.
Well, I'm curious, how did you get into this very unique line of work?
Right. So that is actually a question that I get asked a lot because it is kind of a niche. And So one of the things that happened was actually, growing up, when I was in high school, we had a family friend who got involved in a cultic group. And at the time, there really weren't places to go for that and books to read. And we were trying to see how we could be helpful. And there was nothing out there. Actually, the only books out there were ones written by cult leaders. So that wasn't going to be helpful
wow.
at all.
Yeah, no. Little counterintuitive there.
Right, yeah. So now there's a lot more information that people can access, which is wonderful. But at the time, what we noticed was this strong personality change and wanting to drop out of school right away and just devoting her life to something that was very new and really took over her life. And I remembered that as I went to college, and I started noticing things on my college campus, you know, organizations where they were saying things that I could tell were just to please the person and try to draw them in. Like I remember one time I was wearing a Greenpeace t-shirt and this person who was recruiting for a group said, oh, you know, I love Greenpeace. I really care about the work they do. You know, there's a group of people I think you'd really enjoy meeting, and we get together every Thursday night. The thing is, though, I had already heard her shtick because I'd been standing there listening to her say, oh, yeah, that whatever cause you have on your shirt or that color you're wearing. Hey, I have a group of people who are like artsy like you know, whatever it was that was going to work.
Right. And your manipulative radar just went off.
Yeah, and the person was attractive and looked right into your eyes. And, you know, so I thought, okay, so there's stuff happening all around that, by, you know, for the most part is fine. But every once in a while, there is someone who's doing this hard sell, this manipulative sell. And that, especially on a college campus, what often happens is that once people get involved in a group like this, they can't keep up with their commitments to school and to this group, and they have to make a choice. And they'll often make a choice to stay with the group, which is, of course, very difficult for their families. Mm-hmm. So when I started seeing it kind of in real time, then when I was in my master's program studying to become a therapist, I started thinking, you know, I might need to do this work because I remembered how when I, you know, we were trying to help this family when I was in high school and there were no resources at the time. Maybe there need to be some resources out there. So I was able to connect a little with some other people who do this work. And there happened to be an opening at a place called the Cult Clinic in Los Angeles, which is now no longer there. And I started working there, part-time as a clinician and then having a private practice, seeing general clients who would have had no idea that I was doing cult related work, the other part of my week. And I had at the cult clinic, my first, Scientology client who said that she had escaped. She had climbed out a window to come and meet with me. And I thought, okay, I'm in. Okay. So I was like, okay, if people have to do that, then I need to be here. Like someone needs to be here to help.
Absolutely.
To help give them a place to land. What?
Yes. I said, absolutely. The world needs people like you. And it's interesting that you're actually the first expert I've spoken to this season who doesn't personally have a background having been in a cult.
Right. And so that's an interesting twist for my story. And there's some people who probably prefer to go speak with someone who has had their own personal experiences. Others will say they feel more comfortable talking to me for whatever reason, because they feel that I'm able to have that kind of emotional distance,
right,
and not be as reactive to their story based on my own experiences. So, you know, it's all a matter of choice. But no, I didn't have an experience myself.
Well, I think you offer a lot of great insight in these topics, and you have some really interesting videos on YouTube I recommend people check out. You have a great podcast that delves into these exact topics that we're exploring. And what I like about your work is that you don't draw these hard lines of distinction between manipulative organizations and manipulative individuals. You're able to see the commonalities in abusive relationships, no matter the shape they take. And you help people see the forest through the trees. So what are some ways by which people can recognize if they themselves are in a manipulative relationship?
So if you're in a manipulative relationship, and I think actually being in a cult is just also being in a manipulative relationship, just on a larger scale. But whether it happens in any context, and I've heard it happening also with people's therapists, where therapists have this ego need to take over their clients' lives, or in businesses where you have to give up your family to, you know, show that you have allegiance to the business. I think one of the signs is just that you have to somehow make a choice that there isn't the ability to have the kind of elasticity that people usually have in their lives, where they can incorporate all the different parts of their lives equally and prioritize them also as they see fit. With a cultic group, it needs to, because the leader needs it, become the most important thing in your life, and everything else goes on the B list, or actually way down the alphabet. So you want to watch out for that. If they're making you choose between whatever it is and your community or your previous community. And the reason they do that is because that community can remind you of who you are and what path you were planning to go on. And they could be your safety net. And a cult doesn't want you to have a safety net outside. So, because they want you to be dependent and just stay there. So that's one of the first things, if they make you choose. The other is that if you're not able to get your questions answered, and in that way there isn't transparency, and you will then know that there's deception. If you say, listen, you know, I thought I was just signing up for this first class, but now you're telling me it doesn't count unless I sign up for the next one. You know, how come you didn't tell me that before? And the answer might be, why are you being so closed-minded to the possibilities of this second class? Well, that's not an answer. So if you can't get your answers, then it's a place that's hiding information from you. The other is that if you really can't question anything, that it's really seen that it is in its perfect form, either the system around it, the leader is perfect, the teachings are perfect, and so it would be wrong of you to question it. And in that way, the issue then becomes that your critical thinking isn't something that's given any respect. And over time, it can start to atrophy. You stop using it because you're not allowed to use it. And it comes back on you in a negative way if you question, because in a Bible-based group, that's the devil. Or in, you know, psychological group, that's all of your negative thinking or your victim mentality. And, you know, you're shamed in front of people for having it. So people learn to just go along. And that's a dangerous situation, because then almost anything can happen to you. And again, you've lost your ability to voice your dissension or your concerns or your questions. And the other thing that I've noticed too is that within a manipulative relationship or within any kind of manipulative group, you are supposed to be happy or appear happy all the time. That most of the people I've noticed who are in relationships with narcissists or with controllers have to come across a certain way in public. And if they don't, they're going to hear about it, or they're going to get some sort of punitive action against them if they sort of have let people know that from behind the scenes, this isn't as great as it appears. And so there are a lot of people who are just faking it, and they don't find that out until they leave, or they leave and another friend leaves and they realize they had a fake smile on their face for much longer than was healthy.
You're saying they don't realize it about themselves. They don't realize that they themselves were doing that.
Sometimes they're so conditioned that they don't realize how unhappy they are inside. But what also happens is that if they start to realize how unhappy they are and they have a smile on their face still, and they're looking at other people, they assume everyone else who has a smile on their face is happy. And so what's wrong with them that they can't get it together and they can't be happy about this? And so there are more people in controlled situations that are unhappy, I think, than happy, but you wouldn't know it. And they won't be able to share it with each other too, because you can't, within these systems, share how you really feel with someone else in the group usually, because they're trained to rat you out, unfortunately, and tell that to the leader. So no one is safe to really talk to. So there's this sort of illusion happening within a group. And within a controlled or controlling or manipulative relationship, you are the one who usually stops being able to feel confident about yourself. And you're the one who stops needing to do the things that feed your soul and feed your mind and that are just for you. Your job is to serve the person that you're with. And I can sometimes tell that this is happening in a relationship when one of the people in the relationship looks fine. And, you know, their hair is combed and they're dressed nicely and they're fit and they slept well, and the other one looks ragged because their job is to kind of have their resources emptied and used for the benefit of their partner's ego.
Wow. Well, speaking of ego, I'd love to turn to the topic of narcissism, because mm-hmm. as I've researched cults, I've come across the term narcissism a lot, and I've been told by at least one credible source that most, if not all, cult leaders are narcissists. And I'm not sure how true that is or what the statistics are, but I know this is your field of specialty. So I'd like to start at the beginning by asking you, what is a narcissist?
So there are a lot of different ways of thinking about narcissism. And if someone has a diagnosable disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, typically that would be it. They are people who, for a variety of reasons, and we might not have time to go into all of the things that kind of set that up in someone's personality, but they're people who are truly unable to have a relationship that has sympathy and empathy for the other. And they are often charming and come across a certain way in public that is different from the way they are in private, because of their ego needs. They need for people to truly, truly like them. And so they will be either the life of the party or the smartest one in the room or the most attractive one in the room, whatever, just the one who stands out in some way. And then if you're with that person, you'll potentially go back home with them and notice a very different person from behind the scenes, because they don't know how to be kind, genuinely kind. They know how to pretend to be kind, but they don't know how to be genuinely kind to another person, because it's not important. What's important is to have the attention go towards them and to have people serve them and to have people be kind to them and forgiving of them. That's a big thing, so that they can kind of do whatever they want to do and say whatever they want to say. And you're not supposed to be upset about it. And narcissists will often think that people are trying to injure them on purpose emotionally. And there's this thing called a narcissistic injury, which is about that, that if you even say, for example, let's say a narcissist says, oh, I think that's a beautiful painting. And you say, yeah, you know, I like it too. It's not my favorite one of that artist, but I really like it. That will be seen often as an attack on them, that you're negating the fact that they are right about something, that whatever they say is right. So because they suddenly felt attacked, and that was not at all your intention, they're going to store that information and then attack you back. And you won't know why you're being attacked. And so they will embarrass you in public, or they'll take away some sort of freedom of yours or something. And it will be impossible sometimes for you to find the link, because that's not the way your brain works. And that, again, was not your intention. So it's very hard to be with a narcissist. But the other thing that happens is that there is this overall sense of entitlement, and they do feel deserving of getting everything from everyone. And if a person doesn't give them everything they need, then that person will be discarded or berated, put down in some way, made to feel less than. And the problem is that with narcissism, with also the same with some other disorders, you don't win any points day by day for making sure that you fed their ego yesterday. They start usually at square one the next morning. And because there's a sort of bottomless pit of need. And so even though you were kind of quote unquote perfect to them the day before, it doesn't matter. And you have to start all over again.
Wow. That sounds like a very confusing and traumatic way to live within a relationship.
Yeah, it's very hard. And it's hard to leave it also very often, because they will often be so charming when they're charming, and appear so loving or be wonderful at being intimate or whatever it is, that it's hard for you to leave that. Mm-hmm. And it becomes sort of intoxicating in that way, because you're waiting for them to be nice again. And when they're nice, they're really nice. So it feels really good. But the other part is that they will often try to separate you from your family, because they get very jealous of you having an allegiance to anyone else. So a lot of people will stay with a narcissistic partner for a long time because they start to believe the message that there isn't anywhere else for them to go, because they think their family doesn't care, or they think their family are the ones who are trying to control them or abuse them. So people often feel stuck in those relationships for right. much longer than they need.
Right. That makes sense. And I think isolation is an excellent example of how to recognize whether or not you're in a dangerous situation. Are there any other signs or anything that we can identify as being narcissistic? Like how could we recognize narcissists in our lives?
So sometimes it is a hard thing to notice, especially because they're going to be, you know, fine. And again, very kind of intoxicatingly charming at first, and they'll be able to sustain that for a period of time. But if someone comes across sort of as too polished, it just feels too good. And their handshake is just perfect. And their hair is just perfect. Or they make you feel, it's kind of an interesting thing, they make you feel like you are less than them in some way. Narcissists of all types are very good at having a passive-aggressive style of making you feel like you're not as smart or you're not as capable. Saying things like, the thing that I was talking about, no wonder you didn't understand, right? You didn't study that like I did, but that's okay. That's okay. We'll still talk about this and I'll explain what I mean. Mm. Right. And so it seems like the person is saying something fine, but they're not at all. And they just put you down, made you feel stupid, uneducated. But then they'll smile again at you. And so sometimes you can tell that you're
to bathe it in this illusion of kindness.
Right. And so sometimes you can tell that you've spent time with someone who's a narcissist because either you've been kind of drawn into them like it is a drug right away. And you want to be mindful of that, wow, this was really strong, really fast. And maybe then it's not real. Or you leave, let's say, your first date feeling not as attractive as you thought you were, not as smart as you thought you were before. There were some comments made or some stares at you in certain ways, in certain places on your body, whatever it was, that was to kind of put you in your place. And so if you leave a date, leave a business meeting, whatever it is, feeling worse about yourself than when you went in, you probably spent time with a narcissist. Within cults, by and large, yes, they are run by people who have narcissistic tendencies, who are narcissists, who have that need, and it's a perfect fit for them to have people hang on their every word and devote their lives and make sacrifices for them.
Right.
What's also true is that I've, come across other cult leaders who aren't necessarily narcissists, some, or at least not at the beginning. They started out kind of as people who started a corporation or a self-help group or a Bible-based group. But as they started noticing that they were like a Pied Piper, people just listened to them and drank in everything they said and did whatever they wanted. For people prone to having that happen, it went to their head and they loved it a little too much. And then the sort of that monster inside grew. And other people I know started out that way, realized they had that skill and everyone did what they said and followed them everywhere. And they were so uncomfortable with it that they said, I'm not going to do this anymore. And so that's not a narcissist. And there are other people who run cultic groups or organizations where they have psychosis and they have delusions and they're very believable because they really believe it. And so people who get into those kinds of groups and start to believe the teachings that are really out there are doing something that I think is this diagnosis called folie à deux, which is a shared psychosis. Like you jump into someone else's psychosis for the time being that they have that control over you.
Whether narcissistic or otherwise controlling, if you're in one of these destructive relationships, how is withdrawing from it, if it's a personal relationship, the same or different than withdrawing from a controlling relationship from a group? I mean, are these similar processes by which people extricate themselves from a controlling relationship via personal or otherwise, or is it just vastly different?
Well, there are a lot of similarities and similar needs. And so sometimes the process is almost identical, except for the fact that within a cultic group, there is the added stress of leaving the people you thought were your true friends, or leaving your community or leaving your family behind in that group. So that's very, very hard. And then you feel very isolated in the world. Similar to what happens when you're leaving someone who has been emotionally controlling of you and very, very needy emotionally and has pushed you away from people outside, you might feel like you don't have alliances anymore and a place to go, but you're just leaving one person. And so it, while it can feel sometimes just as intense, it is different than leaving really everyone you've spent like the last 10 years with. The similar needs, though, are that you come out into the world with your head spinning. You've been so worked on that you don't know how to take care of yourself anymore because that wasn't important. And you don't know that you are capable of making a decision on your own because you were told that you weren't. And you have lost the ability, at least temporarily, to feel like there is a place for you in the world that feels good, where you're going to have opportunities again for connection, for love, whatever it is. People really do also need to be able to make alliances, families. That's why I suggest for families and friends to maintain contact as much as they can with somebody who's in a situation like this, just so they don't believe the controller that their family and friends don't care about them anymore. And they know they have somewhere to go. And they know they have people who will love to see them and be relieved to see them. But the other part is that, similar in both situations, it's really important to understand why you were made to feel the way you were made to feel, why you were taught what you were taught, why you were given all these fears of leaving or not trusting yourself. And even though usually it was taught to you like it was for your benefit, that, you know, left to your own devices, you would make bad decisions. So rely on me only. Don't make a decision without my say-so, and that's somehow for you. It's not at all. If you realize that it's just because the person in charge needs for you to be dependent on him or her so that they then make you feel you're not able to make a decision on your own, and that's why you were taught it, and that it's not for you, it's for them, it helps undo some of the programming because you realize that it's not who you are. And it's not beneficial, and it was never beneficial for you. And you don't want to give that person that kind of power anymore, but it's important to know why you were taught what you were taught.
Do these people want you to be dependent on them because that gives them a sense of safety that they won't leave?
Yeah, I think the way that people who are running groups or who are in these kinds of relationships where they want to take someone over, what kind of keeps them going and makes them feel good about themselves and makes them increase a sense of power in themselves is the more power they can drain from other people. It's like they don't stand on their own two feet to feel powerful. They stand on the backs of other people. So if they can get you to rely on them, even though you shouldn't, because they don't know how to be in the world. Usually these people, you know, are horrible with relationships, or they'll give you terrible advice or about being in the world and in life. And they don't know how to function very well in life, really. So they should be the last people you ask advice of. But they want you to feel like you have to stay because you're now ill-equipped to be without them. So, yes, it breeds dependence. And every day that someone knows that they still have power over you and that you're going to defer to them, it makes them feel better about themselves. And they don't want to give that up. It's too intoxicating for them.
Wow. Well, that just helped me view things in a more profound way. So thank you. Mm-hmm. If there's something that you would like people to walk away from this episode understanding, what would it be?
One of the things that seems to be really important to me is for people to understand that we are all prone to this to varying degrees. I remember one time I was working as a school counselor at a school here in LA for a period of time because I love being in schools. I have a teaching credential. I love being around kids. And it was a nice thing to do for a period of time along with the private practice. And I was working with people who were general clients, but also people who had been involved in cults. And I remember seeing these four moms walk into the school wearing almost identical outfits. And I know that if I asked them if they thought they were prone to manipulation, they would say no. But I wanted to actually say to all four of them, hey, what are you guys wearing tomorrow? Because, you know, this was the boots, the jeans, whatever. They were manipulated by marketing and what was cool and what was going to, they thought was going to make them look cool. So even in terms of, you know, watching the Home Shopping Network or whatever else, we're manipulated. But what's also true is that because it could happen to anyone, you don't want to be critical of people who fall prey to other people, because they're getting into this kind of well-oiled machine of manipulation. Someone who's done this a lot of times to other people, and they know how to do it. And so when you judge the person who's gotten involved, then they don't want to tell their story and they don't reach out for help. They're too ashamed, and they shouldn't be the ones carrying the shame. The one who did this to them should be the one carrying the shame. And but they won't, because that's not part of how they're built. But also in keeping with that, there are a lot of families who are shamed, who have their loved ones involved in cults, and they're blamed somehow that it was due to a lack of good parenting, or, you know, your child isn't in a cult. You're just having trouble, you know, separating and letting them individuate. And sometimes that's true for some families, but sometimes family will know something is really up. And so to be cautious and to be sensitive about not judging or blaming the person who has gotten ensnared, and not judging or blaming their families, and really putting the blame in the wrong place.
I think that is an excellent message for us all to take away. Thank you. This has been such a rich interview, and it's given me a lot to think about and sort of shifted my perspective on a few things. So again, thank you for taking the time today. I know you're a very busy person. And to that end, for the people listening who want to learn more about you, for those who want to consult you as a therapist or check out your amazing show, Indoctrination, how can they do that?
So there are a couple ways to reach me. So if you want to find my podcast, Indoctrination or Indoctrination Show, it's on iTunes, SoundCloud, a lot of other places. The thing to be able to do, and if you want to see me privately or talk to me, consult with me, is to contact me through my website, rachelbernsteintherapy.com. You can also send me an email at bernsteinlmft@gmail.com and be in touch. See if I can be helpful to you or to a friend, to a loved one who's in a situation like this.
Thank you to Rachel Bernstein and to you for listening. On Wednesday's episode, TCS leader Ty Byman takes the stand. See you then.